All right, greetings, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chris Dixon, and welcome back to another episode of the Tunnel Vision Podcast. Hope y'all are doing good and well today. On this particular episode, we're going to continue forward, still building from Philip Cooper's book, The Magician, A Study in Effective Magic. And on this particular episode, I'm going to be building from the chapter, which is the second chapter, titled The Magical Temple or Psychic Laboratory. And in this particular chapter, he pretty much goes into detail on having your own personal magical space, both on a physical level, you know, being in your house, you know, having your own personal altar space, and just overall having a space in your house, you know, where it's only devoted to you and your magical practice, and not being accessed by anyone else, so to speak. And he also goes into detail on having a magical temple or a psychic laboratory, if you want to call it that, on a mental level as well. Because that's the most important place, you know, to establish an altar. Is first, it starts in your mind, and then you pretty much pull it down into the physical and pretty much have your own personal, you know, physical altar space, so to speak. But most importantly, you know, it's very key that you understand first that you as an individual are the living altar within itself. You are the altar space first, right? There are a lot of magicians and occultists who no longer, you know, utilize physical altar spaces, so to speak. Like I said previously, you know, a lot of occultists have gone to the mental level, and pretty much they connect with their altar space that's on the mental plane, more so than on the physical, so to speak, which is cool, you know, and fine and everything. But sometimes, you know, from my perspective, you know, having, you know, physical tools is still essential for this particular journey. Just long as you're not, like, worshiping, you know, your altar, so to speak, and you constantly feel that you have to be at your altar space, you know, each time that you need to do a ritual. Now, that's different, so to speak. So it's understanding, you know, these are just tools, right? These are not things that you fully become dependent on, you know, for your work, right? Every magician and occultist needs to be able to work magic, regardless of where they are at, right? You don't necessarily have to wait until you get home to get to your altar to do a ritual. You know, you can always do it in your mind. You can always do them in your car. You know, you don't necessarily have to be in your personal magical space, you know, at your house or place of stay, you know, to do a ritual, so to speak. So it's very important to understand those points and concepts. Very essential. So let's go into this chapter and build a little bit. So the magical temple or psychic laboratory. We will now move on to the magical temple and the basic equipment that you need. Some of you will already have a temple, others will not. no matter, I will describe the building up of a fully functional temple. Then we will discuss how you can best adapt it into your circumstances. Putting aside all previous ideas of a temple, let us look at what a temple really is. In short, it is nothing more than a workroom or a psychic laboratory. In a real laboratory, you will expect to find test tubes, balances, Bunsen burners, and so on, the tools with which a chemist carries out his or her work. The equipment and layout is chosen and arranged by the chemist to suit his or her particular needs. Naturally, one does not clutter up the laboratory with irrelevant items. The whole place is, in fact, an extension of the chemist and his or her ideas. It is a place where one can work in comfort, where everything has a place and everything has a use. Like the chemist's laboratory, the temple also has equipment with which the magician works. It is arranged according to his or her needs, and it is also an extension of the magician. The chemist deals with acids and alkalis. The magician deals with energy. Both use their minds and exert an influence over their environment. The temple is a working laboratory. Like the chemist, the magician needs space to work away from the hustle and bustle of everyday life. It is quite impossible to work effective rituals with the television blaring away and the neighbors dropping in for a chat. You need to have somewhere secluded, and a temple is the only answer. In it, you can shut out the world and work your magical practice without being disturbed. Let us now have a detailed look at the building up of a typical magical temple. The size and dimensions are of little relevance as long as there is enough space to work in. Always allow for the fact that one day you may feel like having fellow magicians inside of your temple in order to work group rituals. The best place to put a temple is as far away from public view as possible. If you have visitors or friends staying, they may start asking awkward questions. Cellars and attics are ideal. If this is not possible, then a spare bedroom will have to be used. Put a strong lock on the door, as curiosity can often get the better of people, and you will be surprised how attitudes can change when other people discover that you have these sorts of interests. Their minds, motivated by Dennis Wheatley and films like The Warlock, will get more curious, and then fear and superstition will step into the picture. Very true. Usually what they do not know or understand, they will invent, and imagination becomes quite fertile, invariably in the wrong way. You will need to invent some sort of cover story, or you will need to exclude people from your home. After many years of personal experience, I have chosen the latter. However, it is up to you to decide. So that's why it's very important, you know, to always have a space that is secluded in your house or even apartment that is completely secluded from, you know, like the living room space, where your neighbors or just company in general, are gonna be at. You know, you never wanna have your magical altar or your physical altar in those places. Because of course, you know, people are gonna start asking questions. And it allows for other people's, you know, energy to dwell, you know, in your altar space. So you want to have your altar space in a place that is secluded from your living room space. So that can be a closet, you know, that's in your bedroom. If you have a basement, you know, you can put it down there in a room that's in your basement. Like you said, in the attic, you know, you can establish a place out there. Or if you have a place like a shed that's out in your yard, you know, you can utilize that for your altar space. But you want to keep your altar space secluded. If you have a small apartment, you know, and you don't have a place where you can seclude your space, you know, you can always keep it in your bedroom. And of course, it's up to you if you want to keep your altar covered up with a cloth, you know, when company comes over. You can do that as well. Because some apartments, you know, like, are very small. You know, I stay in a small apartment, so I don't have a whole lot of secluded space. You know, I really just have my bedroom. So I keep my altar in the corner of my bedroom. But really, I don't have a whole lot of people that come over anyway, so I'm not really concerned with keeping it covered up or anything of that nature. So it's really just up to you and your choice and where you want to keep your altar. But it's always best to keep it in a secluded place, so to speak. Having found a spare room, clear everything out. If you need to decorate, then do so. There are no special colors, simply decorate to taste. If the room has a window, you will have to find some way of covering this up so that anyone outside cannot see what's going on. So what is a temple? What are we going to use it for? The answer will dictate where everything goes. The temple is a place of work. It is a place where we find peace from everyday life, where we can exert a magical influence, where we can learn about such things. Everything should be placed according to a pattern that is both universal and personal, right? So that's the fun part of having altars. You're able to use your creative mindsets and include what you feel needs to be included into your space. Your divination tools, candles, even pictures or statues of different archetypes or deities that you work with, you know, having them on your space. Jewelry, wands, athames, etc. So that's the beauty of it all. You know, you get to get creative, you know, with your imagination, you know, as you create your own personal space, so to speak. Now you will need to work on the temple. You have four walls, so each could represent an element. Let's see. Skip over that part. All right. Let's see. Okay, just like the laboratory, before we move in the benches and cupboards, we need to decide where we're going to put things for maximum use of space and efficiency. Also, remember that you are dealing with flammable items such as oil lamps, candles, and hot charcoal. You can have carpeting, but if you do, make sure you have a fire extinguisher or at least a bucket of sand just in case. Me personally, I don't think you need to have a whole lot of, you know, things that promote fire, you know, with the exception of a candle. But some, you know, some people are different. They choose to have oil lamps, you know, hot charcoal and things like that. So if those are the things that you choose to include, you know, just make sure you have access to a fire extinguisher, you know, in case something, you know, pops off with that, right? So just be careful when you're utilizing, you know, certain things like that. But in actuality, you don't really have to include a whole lot in an altar space. You really don't. You can have carpeting, but if you do, okay. Both carpets and oil lamps have one thing in common, they burn. With sensible precautions, a carpet is quite all right. You could use floor tiles. The choice of color is entirely up to you. Remember, white tiles need a lot more cleaning than colored ones. So tiles, or if you can afford it, parquet flooring, which is laminate flooring, serve just as well. Having tried various formats over the years, I found that ordinary hard board nailed directly to the floorboards produces a nice flat surface. It is not a fire hazard and does not cost a fortune. If you like, you can paint it with a quick drying paint, or you can paint a floor design. Again, the color of choice is up to you. Now, before you start painting magic circles and angelic names on the floor, let me explain about such things. The idea of working in a circle is correct, as you will see later, but the common practice of setting up a circle and clearing the place of working by various purifying and banishing rites is superstitious nonsense. This idea that you ought to chase away all undesirable influences and then stand protected in your magic circle. What are these undesirable influences? They are supposed to be demons and elemental spirits. At first glance, they may appear quite logical, however, it is not. The real magic circle lies in your mind, and it certainly is not there to keep out demons and spirits. The only undesirable influence ever likely to invade your temple are the ones brought in by superstitious beliefs and by other people. Superstition should never be a part of magic, as it will turn the whole process into shambles. Likewise, keep other people out of the temple unless you either know you can trust them or they are magically inclined in a positive way. Magic is not a social get-together or a hobby. It is a way of life. Right? Very important to understand. So when it comes down to the concept of, you know, banishing, I personally don't banish in my workings. When you work with spirits and you start to develop a relationship with them, you start to develop trust with them, you know, there's really no need for you to banish, you know, specific spirits. You know, whether you're working with daemons or demons, whether you're working with, you know, fairies, gods, goddesses, etc., there's really no need to banish a spirit that you work with, you know, consistently. And sometimes, and in most cases, you know, spirits do take offense to that, you know, especially, like I said, when you work with them consistently. So there's really no need for you to banish a spirit away, you know, like the Goetia, those specific types of spirits, you know, there's no need to banish. Now what you can do is, you know, you can rebalance your space, you know, like you can have, you know, like Florida water, you know, you can make your own Florida water spray and you can spray your altar down with it. Spray around your space, you know, after you do a working, and even when you, and even before you do a working, you know, you can always spray and rebalance your space. And rebalancing is a little bit different than banishing. Banishing is completely dispelling a spirit away from your space, right? And like I said, there's really no need to do that if you consistently work with a particular spirit or pantheon, so to speak. So that's a good thing he touched based on. You know, a lot of the whole concept of negative forces or negative spirits invading your space, you know, usually that comes, you know, from superstition, you know, and overthinking, so to speak. Not saying that negative spirits don't exist, because they do. You know, there are imposter spirits, negative spirits that can, you know, if you're not staying on top, you know, on top of your things, your workings, and keeping your space clean, you know, the things that you should be doing anyway, then you really don't have to worry about, you know, what you would call banishing or anything like that. And of course, you know, like if you work with spirits, your spirit guides, they themselves will keep your space cleansed and protected as well. So you really don't have to get fearful and superstitious about your personal space being infiltrated by a negative spirit, so to speak. So it really all boils down to, you know, your way of thinking, you know, when it comes down to stuff like that. So just always remember, superstition should never be a part of magic, because it will turn the whole process into shambles, right? Let's see. The next thing we must consider is the altar. This is nothing more or less than a work surface. One of the more traditional designs is the double cube. Usually it is about 3 feet high and 18 inches across. It can easily be made from plywood or chipboard, fastened together by screws or nails. The top half is painted white and the bottom half is painted black, so it looks like two cubes. If you prefer, it can be made into two separate 18-inch cubes. As a meditation symbol, it looks impressive. However, if you need a bigger area, say for candle magic, then any shape or size will do. It is all a matter of choice. A small cupboard is just as good, as it has the advantage of having space to store things on. So really, you don't need anything, any type of special table. You know, you can go to Goodwill or any thrift shop and find, you know, a small desk or table, you know, that can fit into your room where your altar is going to be at. You don't have to spend a whole lot of money, or if you feel that you want to build you one, you know, you can do that as well. If you want to build your own personal altar space, you know, like out of wood, so to speak, you know, you can do that as well. But just simply stopping by the thrift shop or Goodwill, you know, you can find a good size table, you know, that you can use for your space. And a good chair, you know, you can use a wooden chair, or you can have a rolling chair, right? Either one is fine. You know, it's entirely up to you. Just don't feel the need that you have to spend a whole lot of money, because you don't. All right. Altar cloths are always a good idea, as they add color and tidy things up. Again, color is up to you, and this largely depends on personal preferences and the type of ritual that you are working. Always try to add to a ritual by using color and scent and so on. Use your ingenuity and get involved in the planning of a rite. Here are some suggestions that you could use. You can cover the altar in a gold or yellow cloth to represent the central sun, then use a smaller altar cloth to suit the ritual, such as blue for Jupiter or green for Venus. Another idea is to have four main altar cloths, one in each of the elemental colors, and change these each season. Alright, those are just some examples. You really just need just one cloth, you know, one cloth will do, you know, of the color of your choice. And it's entirely up to you, you know, if you want to change the colors, you know, throughout each season and whatnot, you know, it's entirely up to you. With altar cloths, remember that you don't have to purchase high quality silk or velvet unless you feel like doing so. Ordinary cotton or similar cloths are just as good. They are as magical as you make them. And of course, however, do not allow superstition to cloud your judgment. All right. Let's see. As always, it is a personal choice based on circumstances. It is best to have the altar in the center. This way you can face any direction. No matter what the dogmatics say, you do not have to work towards the east. Generally, you can work eastward in spring and change to south in summer, west in autumn, and finally north in winter. That's entirely up to you. Like I said, I have my altar in the corner of my bedroom. So I personally don't really fixate on, you know, the position of when I do my rituals, like north, south, east, west, etc. I personally don't go about it that way. But if you choose to do it that way, you know, it's entirely up to you. The most important thing is just making sure that you're comfortable and you feel connected to your space. That's most important. The next thing is the temple lights are the next step. Do not use electric lights. Natural light from candles or oil lamps look much better in effort and affords opportunity for ritual work. First, have some form of illumination on or above the altar. This represents the central light and is used to signify the inner power which you have. Other temple lights ought to be lit from this flame. Let's see. You have a choice between candles and oil lamps, so forth. So one thing I want to point out when it comes to lights, you can pick up one of those, I want to say they're called lead lights, pretty much the disco lights. You can pick one up at Walmart. They even have some in the dollar store now, Dollar Tree to be exact. They're like $5, but pretty much they project, you know, lights onto your wall, different colored lights. You can change the colors. Some project out sparkle type of lights that look like stars. So you can, that's a good tool that you can use for the lights. I personally have one in my space. When I'm getting ready to do my work, you know, I put on the light, so to speak. But those particular lights are excellent to have, you know, if you can't get a hold of an oil lamp or a candle, so to speak. All right, I had to take a little pause and find another location. I was at the park and it started raining, so I had to find a spot to park under so the rain wouldn't throw everything off. So I found a spot, but I'm still out and about at the moment. So anyway, let's continue. Stop by the store like Walmart, you know, you can pick you up a little one of those little lights, those projector type of lights, and those are excellent to use for your magical space. Just want to put that out there to consider. In magic, you have to use the five senses. The mind and body react to the stimuli. There are traditional scents for all four elements, the planets, the zodiac, and the spirits on the tree of life. In fact, for any magical work, you need to use the right scent. It will promote the right associations and reactions. The amount of work that goes into making incense is quite staggering. It is a job for experts. Avoid using cheap, ready-made scents. The ideal place for your incense burner is in the south, where the element fire naturally belongs. So of course, you know, incense are very important in your workings, especially when it comes down to, you know, working with spirits. Spirits enjoy different incense, whether it's frankincense, camphor. You know, camphor is an excellent incense to have. Sandalwood, dragon's blood, myrrh, just to name a few. You know, those are common ones that I personally use in my work. Of course, you can pick up incense anywhere. Like I said, you don't have to spend a whole bunch of money on physical things. You know, you can get incense at Walmart. You can get incense, of course, at your local metaphysical shop or Botanica. And of course, you can order them on Amazon. But incense are very important to have in your space, in your workings, right? The next thing I want to touch base on, robes. Robes are always a good idea. When you enter your temple for working, you need to feel differently. There are two points to consider. First is pre-ritual relaxation, which helps you put aside everyday matters and attune to the magical part of your mind. Second is ritual attire, which helps you feel right for the temple. You are an ordinary human being outside, but inside you are a magician, and it helps if you feel and look the part. You can compromise by having an alternative form of dress. Anything that helps you feel different should be used. Robes can be as elaborate or as simple as you like. But they should enhance the ritual. Many variations are possible. You can have a plain robe. It can be white or black, etc. So really the color of choice is up to you, but having a robe is essential for your workings. I have one. Mine's is purple. And when I get in, you know, I put my robe on. Before I do my rituals, I don't do it all the time, but a lot of times I do. But when I'm at home, relaxing and chilling, you know, I put my robe on, and you know, it keeps me, you know, relaxed and comfortable. So it's essential that you have yourself a robe of your choice. And last thing I'm going to go over is, finally, you ought to have some place in your temple where you can use sound reproduction. The main use of sound reproduction in magic is to provide you with sound effects and music. Rituals without music are very dull affairs. The right type of music, as with color and scent, will greatly enhance your magical work, especially in meditation rites. You can, of course, use classical music. You might prefer to use church organ music or meditation music, and there is an excellent selection available today. Modern music is not suitable. Make and keep an index of your music. Heed the card with the type of ritual or meditation for which you intend to use the music. Let's see. Having described the ideal temple and its basic equipment, we must consider those of you who have no space available. For you, think in terms of a temporary temple. Any room is suitable, and you do not have to move a lot of furniture around. You will need something you can use as an altar. The quarter lights and central light can be put away in a closet until you need them. Then just find a place to put them around the room when you are working, so you have points of reference for all the important quarters. Do make certain that you are not going to be disturbed. Before the rite, lay everything out, and at the end, clear it away. Disguise it in some way so that other people will not notice. You can use small wall brackets for lamps, and these can be quickly converted to whole ornaments. Alternatively, you can make or purchase 4 stands on which you can place your quarter lights on. Use a bit of ingenuity. There is always a solution to insufficient space. In truth, you do not need to have a temple. Eventually, you will learn to do without such things and without any equipment. For the time being, do make every effort to find some space for your temple, since much in the way of a ritual experience can be lost. Let's see. Let's close it out. I very rarely use a temple setup now. I carry my temple around in my mind. Let's see. Before I leave this subject, I ought to describe my last situation, which seemed to be impossible. The only available space was a broom cupboard that measures 66 inches long and 33 inches wide. Inside this space, I managed to get a double cube, 2 6-foot-high pillars, lamps, durable weapons, and a cassette recorder. On more than one occasion, 2 of us worked magic rituals in there. You had to be very careful about the amount of incense you used. However, it was a challenge that was met and bettered. Life and particularly magical work are constant challenges. Do not duck out. Use your ingenuity. Be enterprising and resourceful. It always pays off. Now let us look at the essential items. There is a mania at the present time for buying books on magic and equipment. Usually nothing is ever done with these articles. They adorn shelves and temples, and they are shown off to interest friends. Now let me make this clear. I'm not saying you should not buy equipment and books. It is a good idea to have some of these things, providing that there is a need for them, providing that there is a definite purpose. Before you buy, think, do I really need this? What do I need this for? You see, it is so easy to look at the claims as to the potency of certain incense, books, and equipment, and then react. What are you reacting to? Superstition, not fact. Real magic is within you, and it is easily found if you know where to look. Now, as far as equipment is concerned, you will actually need very little. Every item must be there for a purpose. Avoid buying anything you can make yourself. There's a lot to be learned from these crafts, and of course you're adding more to the general personal involvement. Apart from this, only buy those things that you really need and which you use to enhance your ritual. I'm gonna close out. Involve yourself with your temple and inject your personality into it. Make it yours. That's pretty much all I'm gonna go over from this particular chapter. Let's see. To close it out, just always let your spirit, you know, lead you to the things that you need, you know, when you begin to create your space. You know, what I've learned on my journey is that there really is not a whole lot that's needed, you know, for this particular practice. I don't read as many books anymore, nor do I have a whole lot of books like I used to. You know, I actually ended up giving a lot of books away that no longer really, you know, resonated with, you know, my path. You know, I felt like I got everything. I got the things that's needed from it. So pretty much, you know, getting rid of certain books, you know, was a part of the deconstruction and reconstruction process these past few years. And pretty much I kept the books that was essential to where I'm at on my journey. And pretty much if I still need, or if I'm led to purchase a book, you know, my spirit team, you know, will let me know. But, you know, in most cases I have, you know, the things in my space that's essential, you know, to my journey. Because sometimes with books, you know, you can have so many books and you can just become so overloaded with information that you don't know what to read, when to read. You know, it's just there. You know, it's like taking up space. So having a whole lot of books, you know, it's, you know, eventually you'll get to a point to where it's not as essential as much like it used to be, like when you first started off. But it's very important to have a good library. You know, you want to have a good amount of books, you know, in your library. But try not to just overload yourself, you know, with information. Because eventually, you know, that'll start to build up in your space. And, you know, eventually you'll have clutter, you know, books all over the place and things of that nature. Right. What else do I got? That's pretty much all I have, man. And of course, you know, having your altar in your mind is also very important too. Like I said, you know, you have your physical altar, but you have your mental altar. You know, you first want to have it fixated in your mind first. You know, memorize your altar, you know, use your visualization, you know, when you go into meditation, you know, just visualize yourself in your mind being at your altar space, and literally you're there, right? And you can literally visualize yourself in your mind doing a little ritual, and you can still get results, you know, doing magic in your mind like that. But sometimes, you know, you want to keep things balanced out. You know, you want to always do work in your space as well. You know, your physical space. But always have a thin line of balance, you know, between the two. Between your psychic laboratory and your physical laboratory, right? That's pretty much all I got. Hope that you all enjoyed this episode. We're continuing forward with Philip Cooper's book, The Magician, A Study in Effective Magic. That's all that I got for this particular episode. Hope that you all enjoyed it. Hope you all are doing good and well. wherever you're at, the time zone you're in, whenever you listen to this particular episode. But keep up the good work in what you do, and I will talk to you all on the next episode. Peace.